This podcast is brought to you by The Province.
The Province Sports Podcast.
Welcome, everybody, to another edition of the Keyboard Kimura Podcast here on Province Sports Radio. I am E. Spencer Kite at the Las Vegas base of operations for Keyboard Kimura, the Hooters Casino Hotel, just off the strip, just across the street from the MGM Grand, where UFC 191 takes place on Saturday evening, headlined by flyweight champion Demetrius Mighty Mouse Johnson taking on John Dodson. My usual co-host, once again, you hear me running the show. That means, yet again, Paul Chapman, unfortunately, is sidelined. Chappie, get well soon, man. Take a couple extra weeks off to just make sure when you come back this time, it's not just for one show. But I am fortunate to be joined by my travel companion, my post-media partner in crime, Danny Austin from the Calgary Sun. Thanks for doing this, man.
Spencer, man, thank you so much for having me. It's good to be back at Hooters. We're looking out our window. It's a beautiful view of a parking lot in the back of the Tropicana. It's a good time to be alive.
Yeah, it is. For everybody that thinks, oh, man, lucky you, you go to Vegas. Like, we have a parking lot view of kind of the lower rent area of just off the strip. We've got bottles of water and vitamin water, staying cool on our AC unit because there are no fridges, and it's about 35 degrees and really just disgusting hot outside. So this is the glamorous life, folks. This is life on the road. You're welcome for the peek behind the curtain.
I'm pretty sure this hotel was built in 1950 and our TV is older than the hotel. This is the good life, man.
It's the good life. But we're not here for amenities. We're not here for, you know, the trappings of Las Vegas life. We are here for UFC 191. We will get to that in the second half of the show. We want to just kick off with some of the news from the last couple of days and the last week since the last show. Starting off with something close to home for us as Canadians, Jordan Younggun Mian announced his retirement shortly after the event in Saskatoon. We didn't touch on it last week. Works to talk about it now because we can sort of tie this into somebody who may be returning. But Jordan Mian, 25 years old, sort of one of those guys that you look at and hear that he's 25 and he's retiring and you think, man, that feels early. But Jordan got started. His first fight was a fight against Rory McDonald when they were both 16-year-olds. He has over 30 fights in his career. Just doesn't feel, and I really appreciate that he came out and said, I don't have that drive to do this at the elite level. I don't have that competitive push anymore, so I'm going to walk away. So congratulations to Jordan Mian, but did it catch you off guard?
It surprised me. It also made me really happy. And I mean, I think that Bisping's comments a week later, or a week earlier, in Saskatoon, right? Yeah. Really got to me. I thought they were wrong. I mean, I love the fight game. I love watching guys step into the octagon. I would never do it myself. And I think when you see a 25-year-old young man with his life ahead of him, he's got something like almost 40 fights on him at 25. There are other things in the world other than hitting people in the face. So I was really happy for him. And I was down in, I guess, in Vegas again for UFC 183. For his last fight against Thiago Alves, and he did look so dynamic in that first round. His movement was great, and then he got caught with a body shot and went down. And it's not the way I would have liked him to go out, but you know, Jordan Mian, he never quite made it, but he still fought top tier guys in the UFC. I think there's a lot that he should be proud of.
Yeah, walks away with a three and two record in five fights in the UFC, 29-10 overall, which is just crazy. Like, if you go through and look at sort of the amount of fights Jordan had in some very short periods of time, coming up in the Canadian regional circuit under his dad Lee, fighting out in Alberta and sort of some different places. I agree with you that he's a guy that didn't quite reach that potential that you expected for him. I think Jordan Mian could have continued going on and being sort of a Matt Brown type fighter, in that you know you're getting an entertaining fight, perfect guy to kick off a pay-per-view or be on some of these Canadian shows going forward. But I'm like you, 25 years old, life in front of him, doesn't have it, knows he doesn't necessarily want to keep doing this, so why stick around? And to tie that to Frankie Perez, who you sort of mentioned with Michael Bisping's comments, exact same thing. It's frequent that we look at athletes and say, are they hanging on too long? Are they taking too many shots? Should they have hung them up already? Here are two young guys that said, you know what? I've done what I want to do. I'm happy with where I'm at. I'm moving on.
And I mean, I think the thing with Jordan, and there's no buts to me being happy that he's doing what makes him happy and whatnot, but there was this side of it where, I mean, I work and live in Calgary. He's from Lethbridge. I as a result of that, I've followed him very closely, but more and more, we do see guys go and have to join elite camps. You very rarely see guys sort of training on their own, and that's not to take away from the work that his dad has done or what they've done there in Lethbridge, but there was this side that you wondered with his just natural skills, what could have happened had he gone and joined a TriStar, just gone down to the States. And on some level, the romantic side of me doesn't want fighters to have to do that. You like right. The idea that they just stay at their home gym, but I think that would be the only thing that I'll regret is we'll never quite know what he could have done had he gone a bit further.
Well, and I think the interesting thing, and I didn't get a chance to talk to him in Saskatoon about this actual decision because obviously it came on, I think, Monday morning or Tuesday morning. So didn't know it was happening. If I did, the conversations that we had just in passing would have been much different. There would have been a recorder going probably. But that's one of the things for me too, is that maybe, take a year off, couple of years off, whatever, 25 sort of gives you that window that if you do want to come back after a couple of years, you meet the right girl, settle down, or don't and have a ton of fun, and you want to come back and maybe you do want to try a different camp, maybe you do want to do something, that opportunity is there. So for now, I think we both agree, all the best to Jordan Meehan.
Go live your life, man. Thanks for the fights. It was fun watching you.
Thanks for the interviews. Thanks for the fights. And I'm sure we'll see him at some of these Canadian shows going forward. To pivot then from a guy that's walking away to somebody that it seems is getting closer maybe to coming back. Paul and I have talked about it on the show, I think, for probably the last month. Now we see sort of in the last couple of days, Neil Rook at Combat Press publishing a story yesterday saying the last emperor himself, Fedor Emelianenko, has signed with the UFC and is coming back, subsequently denied by the UFC, or at least sort of shot down, cold water thrown on it. Excited, not excited, curious, where do you fall on the scale here?
Excited, even though I think it's stupid. I mean, like, I don't... Let me figure out how to articulate this. I don't really need to see Fedor Emelianenko fight again. With that being said, we're down here in Vegas for an event where Andrei Arlovsky is about to fight Frank Mir, two guys who I completely wrote off. So maybe Fedor still has something to tank. He was in Calgary last year. I went to interview him at some casino in the suburbs. He's still in shape. I mean, I don't know if he's in fight shape, but he's still a very imposing man. I have no doubt that physically he's probably capable of. But the question is, if Fedor's coming back, what fights do we want him to fight? And is he actually going to be able to beat those top two or three guys in the division? And I don't know that that's what we're going to get.
Yeah, it's really interesting to me because I don't know that I necessarily want him to be at the top of the division. I'm sort of in the same boat as you in that after the way Strikeforce ended, yes, he went home and got some wins in Russia and won in Japan. But the way it ended against top competition, I don't necessarily need him to come back and see him fight Cain Velasquez, Fabricio Werdum, even though there's the obvious sort of rematch possibility there. But I wouldn't mind seeing him go on a veteran tour, add him to that Australia show in a fight with Mark Hunt, who is sort of in that 5 to 8 range in the top 10. You know, obviously, Rodrigo Nogueira just retired. That probably would have been a fight that prior to his last couple fights I'd have been interested in seeing again, given their history. The fight with Josh Barnett never happened, so I would be still be down for seeing that fight at some point. So as long to me, as long if the UFC speculation does come true, as long as it's not a let's throw him in there with Stipe Miocic, Junior Dos Santos, not because I don't think he can beat those guys at this point. I would like to see a fight first to give me a bit of an understanding of where he's at. And I think there's ways that you can, if this does happen, use Fedor to generate some more interest in a card, to build some stuff without it being he needs to go right into the title chase.
Agreed. I think we're both clearly a little apprehensive of seeing him at that top level. And then just the part of me that inevitably starts thinking about the UFC's business strategy, they're not paying him apprehensive money if he comes back. They're paying him to headline cards, and they're paying him for, you know, the Last Emperor. That's what's going to sell. And that's where I'd love to see him fight Mark Hunt. Right. But that's Mark Hunt. I mean, I'd love to see him probably fight Roy Nelson. There are guys I think that would be a lot of fun to see him fight. But let's not talk about a guy in his mid-40s coming back. I don't know if he's in his mid-40s. I made that up.
Late 30s, maybe?
38. There you go. Right. So he's not that old, to be fair.
Man, Fedor's only 2 years older than me. That makes me feel...
Yeah. You know what? 38's not that old.
Well, and the funny thing, and you mentioned it, we are here for UFC 191 co-main event, the fight that is a decade in the making. I mean, Andre Arlovsky and Frank Mir, we'll get into it in depth a little later, but they're having a resurgence. Josh Barnett is still around, and so it gives you that little bit of pause. It gives you that little bit of, as you said, they won't be giving him middle of the fight card money. They won't be giving him, we just want you to show up and have a good time.
But the question is, I mean, when Arlovsky came back, you were in Vancouver.
I think
that was that 174, yeah. I believe.
Yes.
And they did bring him back, who was a big name, who was a former champion. Who, you know, I mean, admittedly, his glory years sort of came right before the UFC exploded. But they did bring him back in the middle of the card, and they gave him a couple fights, and now he's... You look at the MGM Grand, his face is on the poster.
His face is on the poster. I agree, and that's very much the case. I think Fedor is in a different tax bracket than Arlovsky was at that time, in part because Fedor knocked him cold.
Mm-hmm.
Under the Affliction banner, rest in peace, Affliction. But I mean, if they take that route, I mean, I look at that Australia card, and if this is something that is happening, that to me seems like the perfect co-main event with Ronda Rousey and Holly Holm headlining. Mm-hmm. Put Fedor and Mark Hunt in the co-main event. Etihad Stadium is sold out, 70,000 people guaranteed. You've got Bisping and Robert Whittaker on there. You've got some other fights that are very much pay-per-view worthy. Then you have that draw. Then you have the return of, for me, still the greatest heavyweight of all time, one of the dudes on the Mount Rushmore of MMA fighters. So it'd be interesting to see. I'm putting money on the fact that if it is happening, we either get an announcement or an in-person here's Fedor on Friday. Or maybe even tomorrow at this event that we have, the Go Big ceremony here in Vegas, kicking off sort of this final third of the year.
And it is worth noting that they did sign a big TV contract in Russia earlier this year or late last year. I forget exactly when it was. So we can assume that they're going to begin to make a serious push into that market. And there's just not a bigger name than him for doing that. So I imagine it is happening. I think Scott Coker's comments to MMA Junkie, where he just said it's happening, it's not happening with us, suggests that it's with the UFC, because who else could it be with?
When Scott Coker and Paul and I and anybody listening that has listened in the past, I've always maintained that the Bellator, to me, was the one that made sense. And so when Scott Coker came out and was like, he looks like he's coming back, but he's not going to come back with us, maybe we're finally going to get it.
Yeah. And it is worth noting that this, you know, you and I both seem to be suggesting give him, you know, guys in the top 10, but not in the top 3 or 4.
Right.
And this is not CM Punk. we don't have to give him a no-name opponent who's going to dance. I mean, Fedor can fight, and he certainly knows the risks, and he's had enough fights under his belt that I don't have the right to tell him not to fight.
And he's not a guy that's going to come back in mediocre shape. Like, if he didn't really want to do this, if this wasn't sort of probably a bucket list thing for him of I want to get a UFC fight, it was the pinnacle, I've had time to come home and spend the last 3 years hanging out.
Get some rest,
heal up, recharge the batteries. It would be crazy, given that we're going to be talking about the resurgent heavyweights shortly, it would be crazy to see a 2 year run of Fedor back to the top of the division.
And Ken, let's be honest, just the training montages alone of him in the Russian wilderness would make it all worthwhile. So.
And the possibility of running the ice cream pictures and the sweaters. Yeah. And, man, it would be great. So that's the one. We will definitely keep you up to date. Follow myself on Twitter and Instagram at Spencer Kite. Follow Danny on Twitter at SunDannyAustin, AUSTIN. We will be updating stuff throughout the week from here if anything happens. You could bet that we will both be on our accounts, on the blogs, putting up our stuff, talking about whatever gets announced tomorrow, if anything. We have Media Day. We have the launch of the Go Big, basically, event. Everybody that's headlining a show from now until the end of the year is going to be here, so we can definitely get some stuff from that for next week. But when we come back from the break, we will look at this week's fight card here in Las Vegas, UFC 191. You're listening to the Keyboard Kimura podcast on Province Sports Radio. Back on Province Sports Radio, Keyboard Kimura podcast, E. Spencer Kite with Danny Austin from the Calgary Sun. We are in Las Vegas at our base of operations, the Hooters Casino Hotel.
Hooters?
It's the place to stay. Everybody blowing me up yesterday saying, making the jokes, right? You must be there for the wings and it must be for the food. And listen, I'm here because it is dirt cheap and it is across the street from where I need to be all week. It helps that there are cheap adult beverages for the end of the night and easy access to mediocre food, so I could just go downstairs and spend $20 and have a meal and come back and do more work. It's about savings, guys. You come to Vegas, everybody comes to Vegas to spend money. We come to Vegas to make money and save money, and we are here this week for UFC 191. We've been talking about it off air and sort of since Danny got into town today. This is a really good card without being that, like, oh my God, I can't wait for this card.
Yeah, it's not a blockbuster. I don't think that there's any way we can pretend that this has, you know, a Jones-Cormier or a Cormier-AJ, or certainly not a 189. There isn't any of that. But it's deep. I mean, there's probably 10 fights that I'm really interested in and would be tuning in on a Saturday night, regardless of whether I was here, to see. And that's kind of what you want. I mean,
it's what I want, I agree.
Yeah, I loved, you know, watching Ronda go out there and beat up Ece, but at the same time, I had to sit through what felt like 35 right. hours of fights I didn't really care 15 about.
15 fights that didn't necessarily move the needle and get you excited.
Yeah. And clearly, Ronda, you know, brings the numbers. This is not going to do great on pay-per-view, I don't think.
Yeah, let's start there then. So, UFC 190, Dave Meltzer of MMA Fighting, long time best in the business in terms of these projections and these numbers, is putting it sort of at the 900,000 mark. We heard about 750 for 189. So this year has been an absolute comeback year for the UFC in terms of pay-per-view numbers, not the Brock Lesnar, you know, everything does a million era, but much better than we have had. That being said, we're headlined by Demetrius Johnson, whose last two events have been under 200,000, maybe even under 150,000. As we said, there's not that massive superstar, but there is some depth. If you were just ballparking, spitballing, what would be, for you, a successful number for this fight card?
I don't think much more than 200. I think that you will get the hardcore fans. I think the fact that it is Labor Day weekend.
It's Labor Day weekend.
The last weekend of the summer. People are going to want to go out, get to the cottage, enjoy the summer. parents are not going to be just sitting at home with their kids a couple days before. I don't think that this is going to be a huge card. But I don't think that we can judge, you know, whether this is a strong card based purely on the numbers. The UFC clearly has a tier of elite fighters who bring it in, who bring in huge numbers. I mean, if you add Chris Weidman to this, does it do much more than it's going to do with Demetrius Johnson? I'm not sure we can say that yet. They keep tossing DJ into these situations where he's the only title fight. I mean, Montreal was supposed to have Dillashaw Barao, but right. that fell off. This sucks for him. I mean, he's going to get, he's got labeled with this thing where most guys in his position are not forced to headline cards time and time and time again. So I feel bad for the guy. 200,000 is my top number.
Yeah, I'm feeling a little bit, I mean, I want to be optimistic. Anybody that's listened to this show or read my work knows that I am very much a DJ supporter. This will be, I think, 4 out of his last 6 fights that I've been at live. It's amazing to me to see him fight live. It's amazing to me just to see him fight. I think he's the most complete fighter in the UFC. But even if I'm being at my most optimistic, the absolute highest I can go is probably 300,000. And even I don't think it gets there just because, you know, as much as the co-main event is something people are interested in, two names that people know, there just isn't that really big pull. And unfortunately for DJ, even though it's changed, I think, heading into this event than it was heading into Montreal, the sort of narrative of personality has shifted. A lot of people have written stuff talking about he's come out of his shell and things like that, which the truth is he's just swearing more and he's just sort of not, he's not filtering himself. He's not being PG anymore. He's okay with being like, adult accompaniment, if that still exists, shows how old I am. He's just kind of cursing a little bit more, which is the he's being his genuine self as opposed to the I'm on television professional athlete role model self, which is always funny to me that people criticize that because he's a family man and he's a father and he's trying to set a positive example. But yeah,
If I can interject, I've always found him to be great with media. Yep. He gives you smart answers. He just doesn't like being asked about the fact that he can't draw big numbers. And the problem is, it's what you and I lead off this conversation. I am not asking him that question because I've written about it too many times. I feel bad about it. And at some point, it's, you know, self-perpetuating. The reason people think that DJ is a nobody, effectively, or in terms of the hierarchy of
you,
a lesser star, is because all we ever talk about when it comes to DJ, because he's so good that, you know, him being incredible technically isn't that interesting to people.
Right.
Which is, you know, I think it's, I say people, I mean, isn't interesting to the casual fan who want to see Ronda Rousey rip someone's arm off.
Right. There's no, him being brilliant in the cage and probably having shown the most development over the last sort of 10 fights or his UFC career for that matter, isn't necessarily a sexy hook. It doesn't sell fights. It doesn't. And then when you have sort of the media's take on it often being, he's kind of boring. Yeah, he's great, but there's not a lot to him. It's kind of vanilla. That doesn't make anybody that's sitting at home pondering what to do this weekend want to rush out and spend $60 to order any Demetrius Johnson fight, unfortunately. The crazy thing to me is that DJ acknowledged it in advance of this and said, put me as the co-main event of one of these shows with Chris Weidman, of one of these shows with Ronda Rousey, with whoever. Don't put me as the main event. Like, if people don't want this, don't keep giving it to him because I'm tired of being in this position. And unfortunately, here he is with a deep card, but not a great card.
Which was very similar to Montreal. The advantage that he has in here over Montreal, and debatably over Vancouver as well, is that neither Bagatinov nor Horiguchi were particularly good at speaking English, so all of the promoting came on him. Dodson's doing his part. Dodson is talking about how he won the first fight.
Dodson has been doing his part for about a year and a half.
Exactly. And that's fun, and I still don't think it's going to draw 300,000 people.
Right.
But at least we've got a little bit of drama, for lack of a better word, there.
We may be not the people to answer this, and maybe, you know, anybody listening, hit us up on the comment section, hit either of us up on Twitter with responses. Do you put any stock in the "but they're the little guys" thing? Like, it never makes sense to me, because I look at boxing, where there are phenomenal guys. Like, you don't just have to be heavyweights to be recognized as being tremendous talents. I even look at what's going on in the UFC now and say, well, Ronda Rousey fights at 135. Joanna Jędrzejczyk fights at 150.
Joanna's my favorite fighter.
Those are two females that fight at lightweight classes that people are interested in seeing. So why does DJ sort of continue to get stuck being that guy where we're just piling all these things? Is it really just the personality thing where, because he's not dramatic enough, because there's not enough tabloid junk, for lack of a better way of saying it, that we just keep finding different things to sort of pile on as, yeah, but he doesn't finish. Well, he finishes now. Yeah, but he's small. Well, look at all these other smaller fighters that people are really all the way into. Mm-hmm. Is that it? Is it just we want to be okay with ignoring him because he's not tabloidy? He doesn't generate great headlines and great video clips. So we find ways to justify it.
We need, you know, listeners on some level to answer that, because we are close to it. And I, you know, we speak with the fighters, and I can tell you again that Demetrius Johnson's fun to talk to.
Great.
I mean, he's
a good dude.
He actually answers your questions. He's fun. There are a lot of fighters who are not as good with him,
right?
And are more popular. So, yeah, I'd love to hear it, because...
Well, and I mean, the thing for me, and as you said, we're probably too close to it as people that cover this sport, and I think for the most part, anybody that covers this sport is really, truly a fan as well. I love watching him fight, and so I don't need him to talk smack. I don't need him to be anything. He said it. I need him to go in there and kick ass on Saturday night and look great, and then I'm going to be entertained and here, take all of my monies. Apparently that's not enough for some people, but we'll see. So we're on this fight. We may as well do it. Danny Austin, Spencer Kite, the Keyboard Kimura podcast on Province Sports Radio. We're getting the rematch. DJ wasn't necessarily keen on it. I guess even just back in Montreal, he kind of was like, whatever happens, happens. It's not up to me. Is this the right fight for him? Do you see it playing out any differently than the first fight?
Can I just ask?
Yes.
Have you ever had DJ seem particularly keen on an opponent? He tends to just let the UFC tell him.
He tends to just be like, whatever, I'm going to go out there and fight somebody.
Do I see it going differently? Yeah, I think that DJ's better than he was. I mean, that's my honest prediction. What he did to Horiguchi was in just being there, and I haven't been doing this as long for Spencer, so it has been a learning process, but just watching him, you know, dominate every facet. His striking was better, his takedowns were better. He got that. I mean, and I do appreciate him getting the last second tap out and him going for it. We've seen so many guys not do that.
I could have just coasted, Brian.
Yeah, he could have. I love it. I mean, I generally think John Dodson is the guy who deserves this shot.
Right.
I think he is absolutely, you know, he's capable. But I never go with, well, if he connects on a hard shot, he's going to win the fight. I can't pick guys like that anymore. I've seen it. It never goes right.
Well, and it's interesting for me, because I picked Dodson in the first fight. I think that first fight back in January 2013 in Chicago on Fox is a huge learning and growth moment for John Dodson. I've talked to him in advance of this event already for a piece that ran in the paper over the weekend. And he said, you know, that was my first opportunity of being the last fight of a night on a big show and experiencing sort of those moments and having Cowboy Cerrone fight before me, and there's my boy gets beat up and finished by Anthony Pettis, and I've got to sort of wrestle with those things before going out myself. Any other circumstance, I would really like the challenger's chances having gone through that experience. But coming into a fight with a dude that made the right adjustments in that fight to rally from, on my scorecard and a lot of people's, being down heading into the final two rounds to get the win, and then go on this run that he's been on where we just see him continue to improve and make those. The thing about Montreal, and a lot of people didn't like the fight and kind of were just sort of blah about it. The thing I loved and picked up on right away watching it live and watching it back subsequent times, because I'm a fight nerd that just jumps on Fight Pass and watches stuff on random Tuesdays, is seeing him make the adjustments round to round of, okay, I can't get this guy down against the cage and keep him there, so now I need to work to get him down off the fence. And that took two rounds to accomplish, but then he got there in the fourth round. Then he got there in the fifth. I'm with you. I think DJ's improved too much. Like I said, any other fighter, I love John Dodson's chances. Almost any other rematch, if he's shown this much growth and had that much sort of development just from an experience standpoint, I think it bodes well for him. But DJ has just been, I mean, it's Matt Hume's science experiment, 100% everything that he wanted it to be. DJ has been the perfect student, shown all the growth that you can ask for, and I'm with you. I think it is a more dominant Demetrius Johnson win this weekend.
I do think we're in for a really fun first round. I remember I was sitting next to you in Montreal, and I remember you saying, it was about probably midway through the second, it might have been a little bit later, you basically said, like, oh no, DJ's found his range. Because once he's got you, and once he figures out your movement and figures out his time, he doesn't miss.
Right.
So I do think Dodson has to go out there and hurt him early. I mean, I'm basically saying what happened in the first fight in a lot of ways, but he can't let DJ survive those first two rounds and pick up points. If he wins those two rounds on points, DJ, the fight, I mean, we're just going to watch Dodson get dismantled. He's right. Got to get out there and throw DJ around a little bit, really.
Does Demetrius Johnson winning a fight like that, coming in and really dismantling John Dodson and sort of having a clean sweep and a dominant performance to hold up against the first fight where he was tested, does it elevate him at all with people? Is this sort of a fight, because a lot of people have said DJ needs a foil, he needs that rival, Dodson can be that guy that talks, he's the one that pushed him the most. Does coming out and just blowing the doors off John Dodson elevate him at all, or are we sort of just stuck at DJ's phenomenal, he's always going to be phenomenal, and people just maybe aren't ever going to get it the way we do?
And I don't think it's just Dodson. I think it's what elevates him is that his two closest rivals, presumably you'd say, would be Benavidez and Dodson, and that he's literally taken them both
he's
out.
4-0 against them potentially.
He's 4-0
at the end of this weekend.
And if this is a dominant win, I mean, neither. I don't think Benavidez thinks he's getting another shot anytime soon, no matter how good he is. So then you're stuck. I mean, Horiguchi was a stretch for a title shot.
Right.
And the UFC can't do that forever. I mean, are they going to make him go up a weight class, actually do a super fight? We've been talking about super fights for 10 years
right.
and haven't seen
them. Haven't seen one yet, so don't put
yeah.
any money on it.
I mean, Henry Cejudo is a guy, we actually, when we were catching up right when
yep.
I got here, we talked about him. I think he's an interesting prospect. I think his wrestling is obviously second to none, so
right.
that presents a challenge. At the same time, he looked terrible in Mexico.
Right.
Everyone looked terrible in Mexico.
Right.
I looked terrible in Mexico without maybe ate too many tacos and drank too many margaritas, but, I mean, let's see what Henry Cejudo does.
Right.
And,
it's where that fight with Jussier Formiga that's coming up on that Monterey card for Cejudo is a big one. If he can look better and have a dominant win against a guy that's a top five flyweight for the last bunch of years, formerly the best in the world, absolutely becomes the next guy. And after that, I think we're sort of at, all right, let's see about going back to bantamweight, where DJ has fought for the title in the past. But I think we're in for Demetrius Johnson being 4-0 against the best possible rivals he has in the division. And I like the fact that he's talked about wanting to chase some of Anderson's records. I think that's commendable. I think that's, you know, maybe I'm romanticizing it a little bit too much, but I love a dude that isn't just out here chasing dollar signs and the biggest fight imaginable every time and wants to build his division and give guys opportunities and truly clear out the... I mean, he gave a shout-out to Ryan Benoit on the... on the conference call. Like, no disrespect to Ryan Benoit, who got a nice win over Sergio Pettis last time out and then kicked him in the ass for good measure. the champion is saying your name, that means the champion really wants to clean out the division. And so I like that. I like that he's not, you know, five fights in talking about the bigger fights. He's done enough already to establish that, you know, if they want to do something more, I've fought for the title at 35. I will go up and fight TJ Dillashaw. Give me that $2 million check and we'll get this done.
And I mean, it's interesting. I do look at the bantamweight. I think that he would have to. I don't think you're going to do a catch weight there. I think that you'd do him going up and fighting for it. With what he's accomplished, I imagine that you'd be looking at him being more interested in a Dominic Cruz rematch than Dillashaw. So, you know, we'll see. That's down the line. I still think no matter what, you've got this fight. And then
you've got the Cejudo. The Cejudo Formiga winner is guaranteed to sort of be that next fight before he does anything else. And then we'll kind of go from there to see what happens with guys like Uncle Creepy, to see what happens with, you know, some of these younger cats that are coming up like Ray Borg, see if Dustin Ortiz can put together a couple of wins. Mm-hmm. Maybe you look at Joseph again, who's fighting Ali Bagatinov in Houston next month. It would be, I think, 4 wins for Joe if he gets a victory there. So maybe you're getting to a point. But their second fight was so definitive that, again, it's sort of tough. So we'll see. DJ's got to get through this weekend. We think it's going to happen, but you never know. John Dodson does have that power. So
UFC, just let him co-headline. just put him on with another title fight.
Yes.
It's okay.
It'll be better for him. It'll be better for you as an organization. We've danced around it a little bit. We've sort of touched on it a couple of times here and there. Co-main event, Andre Arlovsky, Frank Mir, originally targeted for October 2005.
Insane.
When Frank Mir was sort of starting to come back from his horrific motorcycle accident. Didn't happen. Never happened. Never thought it was going to happen in 2015.
If you'd asked me a year ago, I would have said, like, why? I mean, Again, Arlovsky's comeback was in Vancouver. That was a card that both of us were at. Didn't look particularly impressive.
He wasn't happy with it. No. I remember him sitting dejected at, like, I don't know that I've seen anybody at a post-fight press conference that got a win that looked as miserable as he did that night.
Yeah.
And maybe it's because it was a, questionable decision, but he was full-blown, like, that was shitty.
And I don't even remember why, but I remember being shocked that he was coming back to the UFC. He probably felt like he needed to make a statement, that he belonged. And I was in Mexico for Verdum Velasquez, and the talk among the guest fighters, who there were a lot of them, was Arlovsky. Everyone thought he was getting the next shot. I mean, he's that close. Frank Mir is probably my favorite person to get on the phone in all of the UFC. Last time I talked to him, I forgot that he was calling. So I just talked to him about Rory McDonald and Robbie Lawler for 5 minutes. Didn't ask him a single question about himself, and he was up for it. He's a great guy, but a guy who I genuinely didn't think we were going to see one step away from a title shot again. And that is what this fight is. I don't think that there's any question that if one of these guys puts on a big performance, they get the winner of Verdum Velasquez too.
Yeah, if we get, I mean, we were both here for UFC 187, aka Andre Arlovsky, Travis Brown, Bonkers Fest 2015. If we get anything, I mean, even anything similar to what Andre Arlovsky and Frank Mir both did to Bigfoot Silva, or what Frank Mir did to Todd Duffy, anybody picks up a win like that, I agree with you. They're next in line. And that's nuts to think about because, I mean,
it's 2015.
It's 2015. We all, and Frank Mir talked about it on the conference call. He talked about it when I spoke to him last week in advance of that call. We all wrote him off. Me included. You probably included as well. I won't speak for you.
Yes, of course I did. Of course I did.
But I mean, here's a guy that was, you know, had lost 4 straight, was taking that year off. And even initially when he started that, said, I'm kind of leaning towards retirement. I have some other stuff I can do. Came back, wanted to make sure he gave himself sort of that, I don't want to quit and then come back. And it's paid off. And here we are with a crazy fight that is 10 years in the making that we never thought we were going to get. That has a lot of stakes in it. Who wins?
I think based on what I saw from Arlovsky against Brown, I'm embarrassingly, I really believed in Travis Brown for a long time. I'd get a couple drinks in me and just talk about how impressive I thought. And I still think he's a good fighter. I'm not trying to take away from him. But, I mean, Arlovski just connects. I mean, he throws bombs and they land and, Frank Mir looked great against Todd Duffy. He clearly has added, you know, his stand-up game is as good as it's ever been, if not better. I would not be surprised if it went either way, but you asked me, so I'm giving you an answer. I think Arlovski wins, and I think he wins pretty early.
I lean the same way I think Frank Mir clearly has paths to victory. I think he's obviously the more accomplished grappler, although Andre Arlovski back in the day was, as Frank Mir said on the conference call, winning the title with a toe hold and things like that, but we haven't seen that in a long time. I think Mir would have the advantage if he decides to fight that fight. I don't think he will. I think he wants to show that he can stand with Andre Arlovski and sling leather with a dude that's, you know, coming off that bonkers fight. And I agree with you. I think it ends fairly early. Andre Arlovski knockout to create probably one of the craziest heavyweight contenders or contender period that I can think of.
Most unlikely.
Outside of the guys that just, you know, got fast-tracked and thrown into title shots at the last minute.
Well, and it's shocking. I mean, these guys age. I mean, you've got Arlovski at 36. And I'm just checking Frank Mir's age here. I apologize. Frank Mir at 36 as well. These guys have, you know, heavyweights take damage. It's amazing seeing them having this career resurgence. I haven't heard any hint from anywhere about people suspecting them using PEDs.
Right.
It looks like they're doing it clean. And it looks like, particularly with Frank Mir, I mean, that break, your body needs rest. And there is so much pressure on these guys to accept every fight, to get into the octagon again and again. And it's a neat counter to so much of what we think about the sport, that this guy actually just needed to clear his head and go be a normal human being. And that made him be a better fighter.
Needed to just have a year where he was taking the kids to school and training and, you know, improving elements without taking that damage and without that expectation of fight camp.
I played basketball on Saturday and my back still hurts. And these guys, I will say that I think that Arlovski getting a title or winning gets him a title shot. I'm not sure it does with Frank Mir. I was a little emphatic about that. The heavyweight division for the first time in a while, though, is interesting.
It's really interesting.
And it's been a long time, and I can't believe Frank Mir, a guy 36, is taking a fight with Andre Arlovski in less than 2 months since the Duffy fight. This is just a fun fight.
It is really cool for anybody that sort of watched this sport, as you said, or Arlovski's sort of heyday was before the real big boom.
I think
when a lot of the big heavyweights and a lot of the best heavyweights in the sport were still fighting in Pride. And so this feels like sort of that nostalgic, old school throwback.
Mm-hmm. I'm pretty sure he had the belt after the first Ultimate Fighter ended. I think he was heavyweight champion at that time. So, I mean, he was a big name at the time that it was exploding. Yep. It's just his prime as a champion did not coincide with the George St. Pierre's and, you know, the Anderson Silvas of the world hitting their stride. So, yeah. That Tim Sylvia fight, the second Tim Sylvia fight was one of my first memories of watching UFC.
So. It's crazy. It's crazy that we're going to see this on Saturday. We're talking UFC 191 East, Spencer Kite with Danny Austin from the Calgary Sun. Middle fight, swing fight of the main card. Light heavyweight matchup. Anthony Johnson, Jimmy Manua. Rumble coming back first time since the fight here at the MGM against Daniel Cormier for the vacant sort of asterisk light heavyweight title. Jimmy Manuel coming off a win over Jan Blachowicz, who fights on this card as well. Rumble's a really interesting dude coming into this fight because you can separate and look at just the fight, where I think this is a good matchup for him. I think he gets back in the win column. I think we see the crazy dominant Rumble that we saw leading into the title fight. But there's also that other side where he had the rant on Facebook and the altercation with the female at the gym, the previous, which then leads you to the previous domestic violence situations. And so it sort of becomes a, which story or all stories do you go after and do you talk about with a guy like this, heading into what is an important fight for him and an important fight for the UFC, because that division still needs guys like Anthony Johnson that are at the top of the food chain to be competitive and be guys that they can bank on. What do you look at most for this fight? Or can you split the two and look at AJ, the guy that fights Jimmy Manua, and that fight being interesting, and then the other side of it as well?
I think you can split the two. I don't think you can ignore either side of it. Anthony Johnson picking up a woman's yoga mat and throwing it across the gym is, you know, maybe disturbing.
Menacing and stupid.
I don't necessarily know, and I don't know all the definitions. I don't know that it would be the biggest issue if he hadn't posted about it, almost seeming proud of it on Facebook, and didn't have a well-documented history of domestic violence, which is an issue that has cropped up again and again in MMA, and I think all of us want to see it taken care of. I've always struggled with what to write about when it comes to this with Anthony Johnson, because I don't think it can be ignored. There were clearly issues that came with his weight cuts, and for a while it seemed as if once he had sort of managed to find the division that worked for him so that he wasn't dropping 50 pounds, his mental health was in slightly better shape, and you didn't necessarily want to forget or even forget.
But it had been enough of a period because I believe the charges that he pled to, and he pled no contest to charges from 2009, that plea came in 2010. There had been an allegation, I believe, in 2011, and then one last year that was proven or declared to be false. Charges were dropped, things like that.
And I think what's difficult, and this is something that I have wrestled with, because I was there at 187, I've spoken to AJ a bunch of times. You know, when Floyd Mayweather was about to make $200 million, you know, to fight, there was clearly an imperative from the media to make sure that that side of the story wasn't left out, that he had a past that involved violence against women. I know that it's on the record with AJ. Right. He's not making $200 million. I'm not going to say he served his debt to society. It's a very fine line. The UFC has ordered him into counseling. They didn't pull him off this card. And ultimately, I don't know where I stand on all of it. I don't think men should be picking up women's yoga mats and throwing them across
the
gym.
I agree.
End of story. I think that especially a professional fighter needs to, you know, be under control enough that women do not feel menaced by his presence.
I also think that you then don't go on Facebook and rant about it as if it's this acceptable, okay thing that you did, and I'll do it again if it happens again.
I go to the gym and people stretch everywhere. I'm not trying to make a joke about anything, but, like, it's okay to do yoga at the gym. The whole thing is a bit of a mess. It is something that I will be wrestling about tonight as I go to bed. It is something that I will be trying to figure out, because the question sort of becomes, I mean, what do you ask Anthony Johnson? I mean, have you learned from this? He's told us that he's learned from the issues in the past. So you don't want to let him off the hook, but you also know that chances are, in the middle of a weight cut, he's not giving you much of an answer.
Well, and that was going to be where I went to next, is in the middle, like, literally 3 days before he fights, is that the time to really get into this with him? I will say now on the record that I texted with Anthony when all of this happened. We had a conversation back and forth by text, because we have a little bit of a relationship from being just in this business. Didn't want to go on the record and say anything, put it out there, because he wanted to focus on this fight. My hope is that in the next few days after this event, we're able to sit down and get something done, because I think it is something that needs to be addressed more in depth and more, I want to use the word balanced and fairly, not in the sense of give Anthony every opportunity to clear the air, but also don't just come at it from a this man is a monster side, where some people have said, like, he needs to be cut, he needs to be thrown out, everybody that's ever done anything bad should have their lives taken away from them, because they shouldn't ever be able to make mistakes and get second chances or third chances, as the case may be. Yeah. I think it's a much larger issue, as you said, domestic violence in general, in sports, and then in MMA. Like, you just can sort of bullet down of society, sports in general, MMA as a whole.
And I think the sports community sometimes does a particularly bad job of dealing with it.
Right.
I think that the UFC's policy deserves criticism. I think it also, you know, they do have a policy. They are moving forward on these things.
Yeah, having a policy is a positive step. Let's get that out there. Now we need to get to a point where it's transparent and it is enforced uniformly and we know a little bit more about it, so we know what to expect.
Exactly. But I do believe that all of us reporters here, we don't get to get let off the hook because we have sports in front of a reporter. I think that we have an obligation to speak about violence against women when it happens in the sport that we cover. So I think that's kind of where we're there. How do you feel about the fight?
I mean, I think, like I said, sort of as teeing this up, I think the fight is a good fight for AJ in terms of stylistic. Jimmy Manuel is a guy that's gonna throw with him. He's a kickboxer. That's what he does. I think we see something very similar to what we saw against Rogério Nogueira, where a big, massive uppercut ends it pretty quickly.
Anthony Johnson's so scary when he's
so scary when he's on.
Like, and it's, I picked him to beat Cormier, right. Was proven wrong, but he caught Cormier in that fight very nearly.
That first shot landed and DC stumbled across the cage and we were all like, this is going to be done in 32 seconds?
Exactly.
God dang.
And, I mean, we saw what he did to Gustafsson.
Yep.
Although, again, I think that largely has to do with some really terrible coaching to Gustafsson's side. I've gone on and on about this. If you actually watch that fight, Gustafsson
shows directions to him in English.
In English. It doesn't make any sense, and he gets caught. But yeah, I mean, this fight has all the potential in the world to be a lot of fun.
Right.
And the fact that I think Anthony Johnson is going to catch him with a really, really devastating, you're saying uppercut, I'm just going to say right hook, doesn't matter. You know, you watch fights to see people fight, and these guys are going to fight.
We'll run through a couple more of these just so we can get out of here and not stay too long for people. Jan Błachowicz, Corey Anderson, to me, is a figure-out-the-bottom-of-the-light-heavyweight division kind of fight. Anderson won tough, coming off a loss. Błachowicz coming off a loss to Jimmy Manuwa, actually, after beating Alir Latifi. I think the Polish fighter gets the victory just because I think he's a more complete striker. I don't see Corey Anderson necessarily wrestling him to the ground, but I think this is sort of going to be that middle fight where you just, if you got to go to the bathroom, go to the bathroom. If you want to get popcorn and refill the snacks, this is probably that fight.
Yeah. I'm sure you want more from your guests than just me saying but
just
like,
yeah is okay.
That's about right.
Yeah is okay, because we have a bunch of really other interesting fights that you and I have already sort of touched on of like, this is going to be fun. So we'll get to them.
Yeah.
This is a showcase opportunity for Paige VanZant, correct?
Yes. I mean, they're rolling her out embedded. They're
right. Right.
She's the fifth fight on the card, and they're giving her a lot of play in the lead up to this. She's going to win this fight.
She should very much win this fight. And are you okay with sort of the here's our shiny new potential superstar treatment?
Yes, because I don't think that she's jumping over other people for opportunities. It's not, yes, it's here's our shiny new superstar, but it's also, she'd get wrecked at this point by people at the top of the division. They're allowing her to take her time. Alex Chambers, I mean, she won her last fight. Like, she did win her last fight.
Yeah, she did. Beat Callum Curran, came back, got an armbar in the third round.
Yeah.
It, to me, is what we've always asked the UFC to do. Like, we always talk about the UFC needs to learn how to build stars and do a better job building stars. They are building a star. So anybody that wants to complain about the push Paige VanZant is getting or the matchup she's getting, don't then say the UFC needs to figure out how to build stars, because they're doing it right here.
Absolutely. Like, I think that the physical attractiveness thing is what people go back to again and again. She is a good fighter. I mean, there's none of that. I'm not going to comment on her physical attractiveness. I have no, I have no opinion on that, although I do. But, like, Luke Rockhold's a pretty good-looking guy. I mean, you know, he may have gotten the pump in front of Jack Ray.
All the time.
Yeah, he'd never stand next to him.
Good-looking bastard.
Yeah.
Like, I said that about Eric Silva in Saskatoon. I looked at everybody and said, I generally don't like to be in rooms with men that are this good-looking.
Absolutely.
I sent you a tweet that said I was the best-looking dude in the building.
Yep. It was, but look, with Paige VanZant, I hope that people stop asking her stupid questions because she is a good fighter. I hope that the UFC continues to take their time with her. This is probably about where she should be on this card. She's training at one of the best gyms in the world. She's won her fight so far. Let her climb. I mean, she's number 7 in the division.
Love this move. Love everything they're doing with her so far. Think it's all lining up well and think it will continue to progress. Jump to the pre...
Can I ask one question?
Yeah, absolutely.
Does Paige VanZant have to one day be champion for her to... In your mind, will that justify the hype? Can she... If she just ends up being, you know, third or fourth in the division and third or fourth in the division falling short, are you okay with that?
She could be my... She could be the strawweight version of Michael Bisping, and I think that's... To me, like, Michael... The fact that Michael Bisping is as big a star as he is without ever having fought for the title is such a huge testament to Michael Bisping and what the UFC has been able to do with him or in concert with him. And I think that's I'm okay with that for anybody. I'm not they have to be a champion to justify them being stars. You can have stars. Like, I'm not a look at how many rings I have kind of person. She can be 3, 4, 5 for half a decade, and that's awesome because she will be a rock star. She will be somebody that brings eyes to this sport and brings eyes to the female side of the sport. I don't have any problem with it.
No, either way. Fair enough.
Preliminary card, there's a bunch of really cool ones that are on here. If you had to pick one, what is your favorite of the 6 fights that will air, 2 on Fight Pass, 4 on Fox Sports 1 here in the United States, TSN something or other back home in Canada?
Probably I am going to go with the headliner. I do like the Ross Pearson-Paul Felder fight. I'll always bring attention to Joe Riggs because he's only a year older than me and is the oldest looking man I've ever seen. But, I mean, I think the Pearson-Felder fight's interesting. We were talking about Ross Pearson earlier. You know, he had that big win against Sam Stout. I don't know if knockout wins against Sam Stout really count anymore.
Right.
I love Sam Stout, nicest guy in the world, has a great career, great fighter, but it looks like his chin's gone. And then other than that, I mean, lost to Ale Quinta, lost to Evan Dunham.
Right. Up it, just...
You know, lost to Diego... Like, who's lost to Diego...
I mean, didn't really lose to Diego.
You know what? I misread that. He did not lose to Diego Sanchez.
But the record says, and people will look at it and see that it says...
Yeah, I should...
It has been that up and down. It's true. We did talk about it sort of off air. He is that guy that has been sort of hit or miss and kind of right there and in those spots where he could potentially take that next step. He's stumbled. And Paul Felder feels, again, to me, like another one of those fights coming off a good fight against Edson Barbosa himself.
Fight of the night. Like, I mean, that was a great performance.
Where the winner of this, to me, takes that sort of next step forward.
Yeah.
Maybe not break into the top 15 because it's crazy deep division, but takes the next step forward.
Can I, before we move on, say that I went with both of those because I know how excited you are for the fight that's yours. I didn't want to say it, but I know you love both of these guys.
It's a wonderful thing when your guest knows to cue up the host to end things.
I'm sorry I had to do it.
No, dude, 100%. My fight for the prelims, I've been salivating for this one since it was announced. Nuclear warfare in the bantamweight division with Cisco Rivera and former flyweight, missweight champion John Lineker, two dudes that are just, like, I mean, the number of crazy hard shots that are going to be thrown in the short amount of time that this fight will... The really interesting thing to me about this fight is that both these dudes can take a shot as well. So this has the potential to me to be one of those just absolute bonkers 15 minutes, two dudes throwing absolute smoke nonstop, where we just sort of sit down at the end of press row giggling with the UFC PR department because somebody's letting us watch this stuff live.
Yeah. This is one, I mean, I often, the way my schedule works on fight night is I have to be in the back interviewing fighters for most of the prelims, and then I get out for the main card. There's no way I'm missing right. this fight. I mean,
right.
like, John Lineker, so much of the conversation around him will be about missing weight. But
right.
the guy finishes. I mean, when he was a flyweight, he's like...
entertaining as hell.
Yeah. This yeah. is fun.
This is And I mean, the rest of this card is still, just to give sort of the rest of it, Jess Andrade and Rocky Pennington, a rematch from UFC 171 that was a close fight. I'm a big fan of Jessica Andrade. I think she's sort of a women's bantamweight version of John Lineker, where she just comes out and is tiny and throws smoke. Clay Collard is a dude that has zero Fs to give at all times. Will go in there and just drop his hands and leave him at his hips from the start. I'm also really interested to see Nazareno Malagari, who kicks off the show, was a Bellator veteran, was on the last season of Tough Brazil. So top to bottom, it is an entertaining card. Very stoked to be here. Danny, thank you for joining me.
Thank you so much for having me.
To follow you on Twitter and check out your stuff.
You know, if you're in Toronto, Ottawa, Winnipeg, Edmonton, or Calgary, my stuff runs in the Sun normally 3 times a week, one Thursday, Saturday, Sunday. Follow me at SunDannyAustin on Twitter. I will warn you, a lot of it is about the Blue Jays right now because I'm from Toronto and I'm pretty stoked. But yeah, other than that, I mean, that's sort of my story. I'm really looking forward to this week. This is a fun card, and I hope the people who, you know, have a little time on Saturday night, the absence of a Ronda Rousey or a Conor McGregor does not mean that this is not a card worth watching, and I have told people to skip plenty of cards in the past, so.
This is a fun card. As he said, check out his stuff in the Sun if you are in those print regions. Also follow it on Twitter, at SunDannyAustin. You know me by now, at Spencer Kite on both Twitter and Instagram, Keyboard Kimura at theprovince.com. And continue listening to this podcast. We really do appreciate it. I know I said it last week and Paul sort of laughed at me, the shameless plug sort of bit, but subscriptions on iTunes and Stitcher and all of those things really do help sort of convey the message that you guys like this and want more of it. But please do that. Leave some reviews. We appreciate all of it. Thanks for tuning in. We will talk to you after these fights. Enjoy it, everybody. Thanks, be good guys. To each other.